Today's word comes from Ruth 2:1-16. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young woman. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." This is the word of the Lord.
We're in part eight of our series, Beautiful Justice. And so let's get right into it, okay? Part one. Actually, my notes ready. Part one is covenant keeping and worthiness before God. Covenant keeping and worthiness before God. Part two, loving the vulnerable outsider. So we'll get a little picture of today. What does that look like? And part three, redeeming justice through grace. Okay. Part one, covenant keeping and worthiness before God. Let's go right to verse one. It says this, "Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the field and glean.'" Now, if you weren't here last week and you didn't hear, if you're especially one of our members, one of our regulars, you missed a whole sermon, really, that was largely about this topic. Now, I can't spend... review all the points, but just very, very briefly, I want to just go back to what is gleaning, because as 21st century urban people, we probably have no idea what that means, especially if you didn't grow up in the church. So here's what gleaning is from the Bible. So let's go to the next slide, Leviticus chapter 19. If you're here, this was one of the passages I showed you where the practice of gleaning is taught. It's actually commanded by God in his covenant with his people. I'll explain what covenant is in just a moment. And it goes like this. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge. Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest." So that's what gleaning is. You don't go all the way to the edge. You don't take every single piece of wheat, of grapes, of all the stuff that's coming out of the ground. The land is the source of all your wealth. And it's rather extraordinary. It's saying, don't take all the wealth. That's really what it's saying. Verse 10, you shall not strip your vineyard bare, nor shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. So you have some of the grapes, you know, you picked a bunch of them up. Some of them you didn't get. So some fell on the ground. You know what? You're not supposed to pick that up. Why? You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. Sojourner is kind of a strange word that basically means for the foreigner, for the outsider, for the stranger, for the minority in our midst who's not one of us. Leave it for them. And I taught this, and I just want to just review this one more time. I am Yahweh your God. And I said this to you last week. This is God's like stamp. I'm putting my name here. And the picture I gave was, in Korean culture, they have this thing where you don't just give your signature. People have a special stamp. In Korean culture, it's called dojang. And if a person has their stamp on there, that's saying, this is from me. That is God's dojang, okay? I am Yahweh your God. This is how important this is. You will do this. And I gave you one other passage. I just want to just take you to that last verse. It goes from Deuteronomy. It's repeated multiple times, but I want to just emphasize, in Deuteronomy, the same command is given, and it closes like this. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. It's a similar thing. I am your Lord. You will definitely do this. I'm absolutely be sure to do this. And I want to just expand out this here. When God, we talked about this earlier, that worship isn't just a series of like do-gooder duties. That in the Bible, God didn't simply say, I want to have a bunch of scrubbed up people who do a bunch of nice good deeds. Really what he wanted to do was to marry us. That he wanted to love us so deeply that he would unite himself to a people. And that people will love him back. He will pour himself into that people, and that people will pour himself back into them. And then that they will be, that people will be like him, and we will share in his beauty and his glory and certainly in his justice. So that word for that marriage, that union, is called covenant. And if you see this command, to the modern 21st century, and it's not just the modern 21st century, pretty much all people at all times, at all places, that command is nuts. That's my land. That's my, you know, all the stuff that comes out of the land, that's for me. You know, whatever the wheat is, whatever the grapes are, you know what that is? That's dollars. So when you go out and make, you know, God gave you, the way you make wealth isn't necessarily from land. It was like you have a certain degree, you have certain talents. And then some company hired you, and then you get wealth, right? Well, pretty much everybody, everywhere in the world thinks all those dollars are mine. But God says you don't actually keep all the dollars for yourself. And so just think about this. If you're going to be my people and you're going to be married to me, I want you, I put my name there, you will leave some of that for the weak, for the widow, for the fatherless, for the outsider, for the foreigner, those who are very vulnerable, those who are prone to be exploited, those who are in danger, those who regularly, because they're not of our tribe, they're not of our skin color, they're not of our religion, they don't speak our language, they don't know our ways, so we generally ignore them, and there are wicked people in our midst who exploit them. But God says, no, that's not how it's going to be if you are married to me, if you are a people that belong to me. Now, when we're talking about this point, there's so many different ways that God wants us to be a people set apart from the ways that the world usually operates inside of sin, inside of greed and evil doing. I mean, I don't want to be overly mean about this, but we live here in Silicon Valley, and most people here in Silicon Valley think that we're good people. I'm a good person. I don't do bad things to other people. At least you don't generally think about that. But most of us here in Silicon Valley, do we have some place where we think about those who are in danger, the widow, the fatherless, certain minorities who really, they're really suffering in our culture. Every nation, every tribe always has some people that are kind of on the edges or on the fringe, and they're not doing well, and they could very well easily be in danger. And do we even think about, in a very, very practical and very serious way, here's this crazy idea. I like live here in Silicon Valley, and I'm supposed to set apart some of my money. I'm barely making it here. I'm barely making it here, and to consider them. So one of the things that this book is teaching, so this book is right here to show Israel, to show God's people, this is what being covenant to Yahweh is like. And here's what real justice is like. And it's so not normal to the way we tend to think. Now, I want to take you to, let's go back to, I want to take you to the next slide, and I want to show you something that's here right at the beginning of chapter 2 that so many people don't pay attention to. Actually, I was a little surprised. I did, as I kind of was going through my studies and looking at multiple commentaries, none of these biblical scholars, I looked at like four commentaries. 0 out of 4 commented on this portion, which I thought was rather surprising. But I want you to see this, okay? So chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband, a worthy man. A worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. So what you're seeing in these chapters is how a worthy man operates. How does he think? How does he lead? How does he behave inside of a society? And one of the first things I want to let you know is he understands who he is in the covenant before God. Now, I know covenant's a strange word. Let me just try to put it to you this way. Covenant always has three persons, okay? It's like, think of it as like a triangle. We live in the modern world, and everybody, we always think only in terms of like, well, there's two people. How do you get along with somebody else? Well, like, I won't exploit this person. If I'm united to this person, like, I'm supposed to, like, it's just me. So, like, it's just me and her, or it's me and him. Like, I'm supposed to, like, it's just two people. We only think about it as horizontal. We never think that there's a third person here. Covenant is there's always a third person here, and that third person is God. It's Yahweh himself. It's actually Yahweh is married to the people, his people, and how they treat each other will show, well, are they covenant keepers? Do they know how to walk inside of God's commands and justice, of his ways, of his heart? And so, if you walk this way and you have no like consideration for Yahweh, then you won't think about justice and you don't think about your money. My money is just my money. My job is just my job. And then my extra income is just kind of like, well, whatever I want to do with it. That's normal to the world, but that's not being a covenant keeper. And this phrase, what does it mean to be a worthy man? I want to place this question before you. Do you want to be a worthy man or woman? Obviously, it applies to women too, before God. If you've been revived for a while, you might have heard me say something like this. Who you are before God, is who you really, really are. Nothing more and nothing less. In the world, if you don't have a covenant where God is that person above, how we treat each other really proves, do we see that third part of the covenant? That we are married, that we are united in this special relationship of love. And justice is absolutely a subset of love. Justice is actually a form of love. That Leviticus passage I shared with you before, the whole context is love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. Love is not fundamentally about feelings. It's actually even like, I don't have any feelings toward this person. But how will you treat this person? Will you be mindful of this person? Will you be covenant? Under covenant, will you treat this person with knowing that Yahweh, we are in covenant with Yahweh. So I want to just give you a few verses here showing you how actually common this term, worthy, the worthy man, is in the Bible. It's actually, some people just go, well, that's a nice term. But I don't think that's right. This comes up repeatedly in the Bible. Who is a worthy man, actually, who is also a worthless man? It comes up in the Bible. A worthy man and a worthless man. We live in the 21st century secular America, and that sounds really judgmental. I'm supposed to like walk around and meet people and go, that's a worthless man. Do you know that when God sees people, he actually says, yeah, you're a worthless man. You're a worthy man or woman. That God actually has a sense of who you are. The Bible says that this guy Boaz, when God sees him, he sees a worthy man. And it has very much to do with the relationship to him in the covenant. So let me just show it to you some other places in the Bible. So next slide. Proverbs 16:27. A worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. A worthless, the word there is exactly, it's actually, if you go back to the Ruth passage, it's actually very interesting. Actually, let's go back. Naomi held a relative, had a relative, or a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, and the Hebrew there is very, very interesting. There it says, great of great worth. I don't know why they didn't get like very, the ESV usually likes to get pretty specific, right down to the Hebrew, but maybe it just doesn't really comply. And I can kind of understand why they did that. Because in the context, a man of great worth of the clan of Elimelech, you know what that sounds like? It sounds like a man who's rich. And that phrase there, great worth, the word there is ha'il. And you know what? It also can mean that you have a lot of wealth, of much property. And in this context, clearly you can see this man, he's a leader. He has some wealth. That's an obvious meaning of this passage. But it also has a double meaning. Who he is in the covenant. Is he of righteousness? Is he a covenant keeper? Is he a justice maker? Is he one who loves his neighbor? See, one who has eyes for the hurting. So let's go then back to the next slide. A worthless man, it's there, that underlying word is same word, ha'il. It's one without ha'il. That's actually the way it is. Ha'il-less man. One who doesn't have worth. And here you can see it's not fundamentally about money. It's about character. I have to sadly to say, there's a lot of people in our culture we are surrounded by whom God would declare worthless people. This is like a pretty good... It says, and his speech is like a scorching fire. It's like the things on his lips are like a scorching fire. And if you are around people, I'm not even just talking about in social media or something like that, someone who regularly starts fires with their mouth, with the things that comes out of their lips that cause a division, they inflame things. Well, according to God, before God, it doesn't matter what other your opinion, you're like, I like this person. I really like this person. This is my friend. But your friend is always setting fires with what's on his lips. Well, before God, who he is who he really is. He's a worthless man, according to God. Isn't that a heavy and incredible thing? But this is the real standard. The real standard above all time and all places is from God. And when you live in covenant, it really gives you clarity as opposed to just, is it a left-wing view? Is it a right-wing view? Is it the educated view? Is it my Korean people's view? Is it the Mexican view? No. It's who you are before God. Let's go to the next one. Judges 6:12. And the angel of Yahweh appeared to, this is out of Gideon, and said to him, Yahweh is with you, O mighty man of valor. That's how it's translated in the English Standard Version. which I think is an interesting translation, because the context there is Gideon has to lead an oppressed people against wicked people who torment and do forms of injustice. So again, the context is justice. And here, if you're going to be, so really, the better translations, oh man, it's exactly actually the way, it's exactly the way Boaz is described, a man of great worth. So it's not about money. A man of great worth. Here, you're willing to go in and fight and maybe die for justice, for the freedom and liberation of your people against a wicked people. So that's how it's described in Judges 6:12. Let's give me one more. I particularly love this chapter of the Bible, Proverbs 16:27. And of course, it's not just about men. This is actually Proverbs 31, which is a book about wisdom. It ends about like this. This is a great and famous verse. An excellent wife who can find. You know that word, excellent? It's ha'il. A worthy wife who can find. She is far more precious than jewels. So before I go to part two, I want to ask you this question. Who are you before God? That's who you really are. Do you want to be one that he deems worthy? That he would say, you have much of treasure. But it's actually much more important than monetary treasure is that he would consider one of justice, of love. That's one that seeks after his face inside a covenant. Okay? Let's go to part two. Loving the vulnerable outsider, and let's take you through some pieces of this narrative, and I want you to see how does a worthy man operate inside of genuine justice. So for those of you who haven't been walking with us, Ruth is a foreigner. She's a Moabite. And Moab is an ethnic nation that hates Israel, and Israel hates them. And honestly, Moabites, they're a wicked nation. They sacrifice children to a pretty gross and horrible false god. Okay? And so the Israelites, who actually belong to the real God, pretty much despise these people and vice versa. And yet, she is the daughter-in-law of an Israelite named Naomi. And she's now come to this foreign land, and she is risking being hated and being rejected through racism. And she does this thing called gleaning, which has got to be a pretty even humiliating thing to do. To go and pick up food from the leftovers from somebody else's land. And it's a fraught and difficult thing. Especially if you maybe have a different skin color, a different language, a different ethnicity. You got to think that they're going to see who I am and they're going to be like, what are you doing here? Get out. We don't like you. We don't want any of your kind out here. Get out of here. That would be utterly normal. And just because this is Israel, don't think everybody is a covenant keeper. It's not every piece of land where somebody who is fatherless or a widow or an outsider like her would show up, and they're not going to end up on the land, on the wealth of someone who is worthy, according to the Bible. But in her case, she did. And here's what happened. So let's look at it. Verse 3. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, the Lord, this is Yahweh, the Lord, capital L-O-R-D, it's his name. I probably should have changed that, actually. Yahweh be with you. And they answered, Yahweh bless you. I told you he is a man of the covenant. Apparently this is how he leads his people. All those who work for him, the first thing he says to them, he reminds them, hey, you know who we work for? The Lord. Yahweh, may Yahweh bless you. And may Yahweh bless you. Actually, when I hear that, you know what I hear? I hear the classic standard priestly benediction, the blessing. Sometimes you'll hear it in our church, the Lord bless you and keep you. May Yahweh bless you and keep you and turn his face toward you and be gracious to you. So here he is, when he's at work, he's like, get out there and make us a lot of money. Make sure you get every single piece of wheat and barley and grapes, because I want to be rich, and you'll get a really nice bonus at the end of the year, and we'll promote you. Isn't that the undertow? That's the spirit of all of our companies in Silicon Valley. But that's not how he leads. His is, may the Lord bless you and keep you. You see it? And clearly that's how he leads, and that's how they think. Verse 5. Then Boaz said to his young man who is in charge of the reapers, that's kind of like his senior manager, right? Whose young woman is this? And here's the first thing I want to say, which is simply he sees her. He sees her. When you live in this city, let me ask you, do you see the fatherless, the widow, the outsider? Do you see them? Occasionally, maybe you do. There's a particular corner. It happens pretty regularly when I'm driving to church where certain people beg there. And regularly, they're not the same ethnicity as me. They don't have the same skin color as me. You ever notice these people? You notice the people sleeping in the streets? There's a certain turnoff from Lawrence Expressway that I get to when I get onto Central Expressway on my way to church. And you know what's there? There's like a mobile home, and a truck. You know where those mobile homes are? That's where some people are living. So, first, do you see them? Well, Boaz, he sees her. He's like, who is that? Right? And then his servant says, well, she's a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. You know, everybody knows everybody here. So, like, Naomi, she's come back. She's been away for more than a decade. And people know that her life has completely become wrecked. Her husband has died. She's lost her two sons. She's brought back her daughter-in-law, which was probably pretty incredible. They're like, whoa. You know, we really pretty much hate these people, so why would you bring her back home? Because you know nobody in town likes her. Because we don't like those kind of people here. But it's an extraordinary thing that one who was a foreigner would cling to her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law. There's so many, you know, it's like culture after culture after culture. Is the daughter-in-law, mother-in-law relationship usually an easy relationship? In culture after culture after culture, that's often a hard relationship. Would you want to sacrifice your whole life, go to a people that will probably be racist to you, wake up in the morning, work hard all day, and maybe receive racism and maybe even be in physical danger to make enough food for your mother-in-law? But she, this is what she's doing. So, let's move on. Verse 7. She said, this is the manager here, senior VP, okay, of the enterprise of Boaz's business here, says, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Verse 8. Now Boaz, he actually goes and talks to her. Now, I want to just say something for a little moment. Wouldn't it be easier, he's the boss, just be nice to her. See ya. That would be easier. Instead, he goes right up to her. Now listen, my daughter. do not go to glean in another field or leave this one. I thought about this. I thought about all the different racial hatreds in the world. I can imagine, and I'm Korean American, and when I was in college, I read this book about Japanese baseball, which I loved. And I just thought the Japanese do baseball so awesome. And they would receive these foreign, you know, baseball players, a lot of them from America. And because they were foreigners, so this is the top league of Japan, at least in the 1990s, you know what they would do? They would basically unfairly call the strike zone against those who were not Japanese. And those who were white and they were black from America would get really mad because they would know they'd get called out unfairly. And so then they went to their Japanese teammates and said, what could I say to the umpire that could really, really, like, just stick it to him? Because I want to give him the F word to the ultimate maximum. Here's what you say. So then he gave it to him. Say this phrase, blah, 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 blah. And then the guy learned this phrase. And then the next time he got unfairly struck out, he turned around and he said this phrase. You know what he called him? He called him a bleep in Korean. And then the umpire went completely bananas. And when I read that, it's just such a reminder of just how difficult the history between Koreans and the Japanese have been. And I love Japanese culture. I love Japanese things. I love Japanese food. And there are some dear Japanese folks in our church who I love. And can you imagine, I just think, if someone from either country were to show up and someone else would walk up to this, let's say you're Japanese and go up to this Korean woman and call her my daughter. Could you imagine that happening? Could you imagine if you were in the Jim Crow South and a black woman needed help and a white woman who's the boss of the rich people's property would go up to her and say, my daughter. And that's how he talks to her. And moreover, then he protects her. Don't go anywhere else. Stay here. You know what he's doing? He's basically saying, you can pick up all the food here. And you know what that means? That means he's going to lose his dollars. It'd be better if it says, yeah, you can go over there, you can go over there, you can go over there. And then, you know, my neighbor's fields, you know, they'll give up some money and you can benefit from them. Instead, he says, no, why don't you stay here? Goes another way. Have I not charged the young man not to touch you? This is actually such an important point. I'm going to say more about this in a later message. You know what's where she's in danger of here? Assault. So he says, stay here and you'll be safe. And number one more. And drink what the young men have drawn. So they're working hard out there. They have to go into a well. They have to dip this thing in. They have to pour out this water. And so, well, the normal thing is you just get your own water. We're nice enough to let you, like, pick up some of our food, right? So, but you got to get your own water. But actually, he says, no, you can drink their water. Freely go drink. Verse 10, she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? She's utterly shocked that anybody would go this far out of their way to bless her. I want to ask you this question. We're about to start a mercy team in our church. I'm not that clever. I didn't plan the mercy team meeting to be on this particular Sunday, but praise the Lord. I guess he, you know, made me, even though I'm not that smart, that it landed that way. When we offer justice and real mercy to some of the people who come into our midst, I want them to think, I can't believe you would go this far out of your way to help me. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And I hope they would know, and then we could say, well, because we're in covenant with one who loves us, who gives you real justice. At least, maybe you won't say it exactly that way, but that's what's in our heart. And when we get a chance, we could share that. Let's jump ahead, verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. I want you to think about this for a moment. He invited her to their table. Everybody there is Israelite. Everybody there, she's probably wearing not so nice clothes. She's probably maybe the wrong skin color, the wrong hairstyle, because she's from a faraway other nation. And so here she is, and everybody's going like, this is strange. But he's setting the tone. We will welcome you. Verse 15. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. Also, pull out some from the bundles for her. Do not rebuke her. So, don't just let her have the leftovers. Give her some of our best, the stuff that we want to keep. Why don't you bless her that way? And here's what I think do not reproach her means. Hey, I know some of you have some bad thoughts about her. You might want to say something racist to her. I know you're thinking about it in a racist way. You're probably like, I can't wait for you to get out of here. I don't really want to be the one sitting next to you while we're having this meal. Don't you dare do that. Don't you dare do that. Indeed, give her some of our best. That's how a worthy man operates. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that beautiful? Let's go to part three. Redeeming justice through grace. It's an extraordinary and heroic thing. If we watch this in a movie, I think, like, who should play the part of Boaz? They get, like, the best-looking Hollywood person, right? And when we get to this part of the movie, I mean, we might cry. We would go, yes, the women would want to fall in love with this guy, right? And hopefully the men would want to be this like him. And if there is, and then if some of us went out and became like him, the world would be better. But you know, we know that we can't actually really, like, fix this problem. And there's a lot of us, we're like, we sit there and go, well, come on. If I just did this one part, will it make that much difference? And we live in a time when justice, we're not even sure. There's so many different ways justice is talked about. And honestly, it's not like this, right? There's a lot of false justice. There's a lot of world's justice. We're not even really sure we want to participate in that. Maybe some of you do, maybe some of you don't. And if we're going to do God's kind of justice, my goodness, it'll be really, really hard, won't it not? And the way I want to close this message is, Boaz can inspire you, and he can challenge you, but he cannot really put the profound heart of real justice in you. He cannot cause you to say, well, I kind of want to be a just, maybe not that much. Okay, maybe there's three categories. There's the worthy man, there's the worthless man, and then there's kind of a neutral, not quite worthy man, but I'm not a totally worthless man either. I'll just kind of settle for that middle, kind of like C-minus category. And isn't that the way most of us would rather be? And every now and then you're like, okay, maybe I'll be moved to try to be more like Boaz and to be worthy. But that's why the world is kind of so junky and horrible as it is. What if every man and every woman in the city was like this? Wouldn't you want to live in that city? What if you got laid off from your job? What if your wife got cancer and then you lost her income, because that's what it's like here in Silicon Valley, right? You got to work really, really hard. She's working really, really hard. Oh, you're like, and you're barely making it. And then what if she got sick and lost her job, and then you lost your house? And then what if you had to end up in the bad neighborhood and your kids have to go to the bad school, so to speak? But what if everybody was like Boaz? Or what if there was a neighborhood like Boaz? Wouldn't you want to go move to that neighborhood? And wouldn't you know there, I'd be better than safe. Not just safe, I'd be better than safe. And we know we're not living in that world. But in order to get to a world that's like that, a city that's like that, you know, the Israelites, they lived in Egypt. And when they became covenant to God, God changed their identity from slaves in Egypt. That's why I shared that with you. You were once slaves in Egypt. And we live in the 21st century Egypt. You were slaves in Egypt, but I married you. We are covenant breakers, and we are covenant failures. And we are really not even close to being worthy like Boaz for the most part. The one far greater than Boaz, the one whose worth is infinitely more than Boaz. He came so that he can make the world the way I just described it, where justice would reign. Where if you would get to the place where you're the one who's poor, you're the one who's in big trouble, you're the one who's like, I'm wrecking my marriage because I'm a bad husband. And then my wife will divorce me, and then we're going to lose all our wealth, and I won't have my kids around anyway, which happens in our city all the time. But I hope there's some who will be like Boaz, women like Boaz to me. Well, there's one who has come to make the world that way. And you know who his name? The greater Boaz, his name is Jesus. Let's close with this passage. This is from Luke chapter 4, verse 17. This is at the beginning of the Lord's ministry. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. This is Jesus. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor." That includes those who have money, but they are desperately poor because they don't have real justice. They don't have covenant. They don't have Jesus. "He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then he closed the book, and then he said this, "Today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Brothers and sisters, we live in a very unjust city and a very unjust world, and I hope you're not hungry or nervous about your next meal, or that you walk every day and you're afraid that maybe you could be in physical danger, or that somebody will exclude you through racism. But do you know that if you are not in the truly just and beautiful city that will be forever and ever, we're just going to cry and we're going to long for one day, for real justice, the one who can truly release and give liberty to the oppressed. Do you know the oppressed is not out there? You and I, we belong to Egypt. And the one who is the ultimate covenant fulfiller, the one who made justice come, he has already done this for us. Today, this has been fulfilled for you. Through the death and resurrection of Jesus, to give us the ultimate just city forever and ever. Could you live for that? Could you remember that we were like Ruth before him, and the greater Boaz came, and he invited you to the table, and he protected you, and he saw you, and he loved you. He didn't just give you money or food. He bled for you. He died for you. He gave a life for you that you can never lose. Please consider that justice and that mercy and receive that and ask the Lord to make you a little bit more like Boaz today, okay? Let's pray. I think about this incredible man. Father, I know I'm no Boaz. That I hope I'm not a worthless man. I hope I'm more at least the neutral man. But because of Jesus, would you place a heart in me? Would you place a heart in all of us? Would you make us of Ha'il? Thank you, Lord Jesus. You're not just come to give us food. You did not come to just give us money. You came to give us your Ha'il, your great worthiness, your great riches, your heart of justice and mercy. And you didn't just come to do that for me or those who I know. You came that to do that for those who or outsiders. You came to pretty much wash this whole city and to transform this whole world. And help us to walk in that hope, that truth, that promise. That kingdom is coming. That kingdom is ours. And while we live here in the 21st century Egypt, would you pour out your spirit on us? Would you unleash this powerful word in us? Would you let true justice and your glory be poured out in us so that we'd walk more toward worthiness before you, the heart of Boaz, and even better, the heart of Christ.